In the name of the Father, and the Son, and the Holy Spirit, one God, amen. Today is the third Sunday of the Holy Great Fast. I hope we're all fasting and taking the blessing of this great fast. It will pass by faster than we would realize. This parable is very familiar to us. It's the parable of the lost son, or sometimes called the prodigal son. But a more accurate description would be the parable of the two lost sons. And I think when we look at this parable, sometimes we can relate to this. Perhaps we can relate to this younger son, feeling that inside of my house, I feel in bondage. I feel like I want to get out. It's better to get out. And we're tempted to get out sometimes as children in the homes of their parents. We have this temptation of, I want to get out of the house. The house is out of the house is better. Perhaps in the church, we'll say, well, the church's rules or God's rules are too strict. I see the people around me who are living in freedom are much better and they're happier. So out is better than in. So we're often perhaps tempted with this idea of getting out. I see perhaps I have some troubles in my marriage, and I think getting out is always better than staying in and fighting for the sake of the marriage and for the sake of our children. So sometimes we're tempted to get out of whatever situation it is, even if it's work. You know, sometimes we're tempted to leave from the very first moment that there's, you know, an issue at work. So I think if we look at this parable, it gives us a striking contrast between those who are out of the house and those who are inside of the house. And in particular here, we're speaking about the outside of the house of God, or the church, and inside of the house of God, or the church. And I think the Lord provides us an example of those who live in His house and those who live without of His house or outside of His house. If we'll notice as well, the title of the sermon is Seeking Bondage and Finding Freedom. The young boy was leaving the house thinking he would be freedom, but in actuality he was seeking bondage. And it wasn't until his return that he actually found freedom in his return to his father's house. That's why St. Paul tells us in Galatians 5, he says, "Stand fast therefore in the liberty by which Christ has made us free, and do not be entangled again with the yoke of bondage." So if you've been set free, don't go again and entangle yourself with bondage. If we look at the story, the parable, it takes place in two primary areas. Inside the house, the father's house, and that's where it begins. And then we see the young boy go out of his father's house and then return back to the father's house. So we'll take these three stops very briefly, and we'll see what we can learn from them. So the first one is in the father's house to begin with. The boy was there, and he thought to himself that I wanted to go out of the house because out is better. So he said, in order for me to go out, I need money. And I think the first thing we can learn about the father's house is that the boy knew that there were certain principles that were not accepted in his father's house. The way that he desired perhaps to live lavishly and luxuriously was not what his father would have accepted. So he knew that he couldn't live this way in his father's house. And this is the first thing we have to understand, as there are some behaviors that weren't accepted in his father's house. And if he wanted to live this way, he knew he had to leave, because his father wouldn't permit it. If we look at the traditional name, the prodigal son, right? If I asked many of you what the term prodigal means, prodigal, you would say that it means like lustful or fornication. And sometimes we get this because of what the older brother accused him of spending his money with harlots and so on. But actually the word is not really that. It's actually means more of excessive spending, right? So he left his father's house not for harlots, but to be, you know, spend excessively, to live an excessively luxurious life, right? And this was the problem. His brother falsely accused him of you know, of spending it with harlots and so on. But if we put ourselves in this scenario where the father, or he wants to leave his father's house. Remember, if you take this parable in the context of the time of Palestine, they lived in these small communities, so they would have the farms all around them. And instead of living on the farm, because it would take up precious farmland, they would have this small, you know, city where they would all live in, packed together, and then each one has their farm outside. So this story would have taken place in this small, you know, city, and it would have been a public affair. You know, everybody knows each other, and if the son leaves and takes half of his possession, meaning the father would have had to sell land to give his son this money. So everybody would have known about this. And this would have brought great shame upon the family and this young boy. So the first thing, we'll speak about this a little bit more later, but I just wanted to make sure you understand this would have been a very shameful thing to do at that time. So the father didn't endorse this kind of behavior. So that's the first thing we learn in the father's house, as there were firm boundaries. It wasn't just loosey-goosey, right? There were firm boundaries. There were things that we do and the things that we don't do, and they were firm about it. The second thing we find in the father's house is that all his needs were provided for. All his needs were provided for. He didn't need anything, wasn't missing anything, but he wanted something in excess. He wanted something in excess. And for his father to give him half of his inheritance and then still have hired servants and pay them more than what they need, and then when he comes back again, he will make him a son again, worthy of an inheritance, which shows us that the father is actually very wealthy and can provide for his son. So when this young boy decided to leave his father's house, he was willingly depriving himself of the security of his father's house. Perhaps he didn't think about it. And sometimes when we think about leaving, we don't think about what will happen afterwards. We think about now. I want immediate satisfaction, and that means get out of the house. But then when I get out of the house, then I forego and I deprive myself of the security of being in the house. Those who say to themselves, the church has so many rules and God's commandment has so many rules, I want to go out, they don't realize that actually out there, there's more bondage. The rules are given to us here for our protection. So all the needs are provided for inside the father's house. That's why in the beginning of the fast, the Lord told us, seek first the kingdom of heaven and what? All else will be added to you. This all else is easy for him. All else that you need in this world, all the things that are temporal will be added to you. But seek first the kingdom of God. Seek first to remain in the house. The third thing we see in the house of the father is that the father respected the freedom of choice of his son. He gave him the freedom of choice. He didn't bend his rule or accept the evil in his home, but he respected the freedom of his child. like I said, this would have been a very outrageous thing to do for this boy, but his father, in his humility, he accepted this, although the common response would have been something rage, you know, to be anything less than rage. Imagine, Kida, if one of your children come to you and says, Father, I'm tired of being, you know, in your house. I want to leave, and I want my inheritance now. What does this mean? If somebody says, I want your inheritance now while you're alive, it means that I wish you dead. I wish you dead so I can take your money. As a father, this is very hurtful. I provide for my son, I care for him, I love him, I shelter him, and I give him all this emotional, you know, support and so on, and then what I get from it is he only loves me because of my money. This is very hurtful. But despite this, the father humbled himself and granted the request of his son to respect his freedom. You know, God does the same thing with you and I. God, in his humility and in his love for us, created us with the free will. And not with just the free will, but the free will even to disobey him. How many of the engineers or anybody who creates anything makes a computer with the ability to decide not to listen to my command? Imagine if they built this computer and it was very nice And then I finished writing my 20-page paper in school, and I went to hit save, and then a message popped up and said, I'm sorry, I'm not going to save, I'm going to shut down. And it shuts down. What would we do to the computer? It happened. Yeah. We'd probably take the computer and throw it out of the window, right? So we wouldn't do that, but God did that. God created us with the ability to disobey because he respects our freedom. And this is a sign of love. But he tells us, he respects our freedom, but he tells us, as he says in Deuteronomy, I have set before you life and death, blessing and cursing. Therefore, choose life that you and your descendants may live. So it says, I've left before you life and death. But if you want to live, choose life. Right? He tells us what to choose if we want to live. But he won't keep us from choosing the path of death. So even when we choose to disobey him, though, he still loves us and he still extends his hand to us. That's why he came. He became incarnate even when we chose death. So he doesn't leave us and abandon us because we have chosen death. And we see that in the parable of today. That's why St. James tells us, draw near to God and he will draw near to you. Draw near to him, begin this path, and he will draw near to you. Then the boy leaves and he goes outside of the father's house. What do we see outside of the father's house? We see that there are no restrictions for the young boy. There's no restrictions. He leaves and he is happy and he's far from the restrictions of his father. To this young boy, this is the definition of freedom. And if you ask a lot of the youth and the young children what the definition of freedom, they'll say, and they'll give you a definition that means without rules. Without rules. Without borders. I can do whatever I want whenever I want. But this is a false definition of freedom. Very deceitful. It's the way of destruction. Right? And he says that he went into a far country. And he didn't just go outside of his father's house, but he went where? To a far country. This tells us that actually he put himself beyond the protective hand and the watchful eye of his father. So he went far enough so his father couldn't protect him or even keep an eye on him. He went far away because he didn't want his father to keep an eye on him. And of course, what happened after this was a result of this, that he went out of his father's house and out of his under the protection of his hand. However, the restrictions of his father's house were for his protection. He didn't realize until later that the rules that his father had was for his protection and his safety. Listen to what the psalmist says about the commandments of God that are given in his house. He says, unless your law being God's law, unless your law had been my delight, I would then have perished in my affliction. Unless your law has been my delight, I would have perished in my affliction. Because his law is protection. And when I go outside of the law, then I perish. Then I perish. Because the law of the world and the law of Satan is death. Satan will always tempt us that the grass is greener on the other side. It's always better outside. And he'll tempt us and lure us outside until we go outside and we find misery. It's what he did with Adam and Eve and what he does with us even till today. How often will he tempt us? Outside is better. If you're serving, he's going to say, not serving is better. If you're a priest, he'll say, not being a priest is better. If you're a deacon, he'll tell you, not being a deacon is better. Right? Always he's going to tell you, outside is going to be better than the inside. But this isn't the case. Also, we see in the outside that he pursued the happiness and pleasure. He thought that he could get happiness and pleasure being outside of his father's house. In the book of Proverbs, it says what? A satisfied soul loathes the honeycomb, but to a hungry soul, every bitter thing is sweet. What does this mean? It says to a soul that is satisfied, it loathes the honeycomb, meaning loathes means that it doesn't like, you know, it rejects, it's not tasteful, right? So somebody who's satisfied, if he sees something sweet like a honeycomb, I'm satisfied, I'm full. But then he says, but to a hungry soul, the bitter thing becomes sweet. The sin becomes sweet. If I don't get my fill and my satisfaction from God, I will go after the things that are in bondage and bitter to give me satisfaction, thinking that it's sweet, but it's actually bitterness and bondage, as this young boy experienced. The third thing we learn from being outside of the Father's house is that the acceptance of those who are outside are conditional. So we have conditional acceptance. Inside the Father's house, you see his unconditional acceptance in his return. Outside, he was only accepted when, as long as he had money. Had a lot of friends, he had parties, he spent lavishly, and everything was fine and dandy. As long as he had what? As long as he had the money. But then once he lost his money, as they say, محدث سأل فيه, right? No one even gave him an eye, right? No one even looked at him. To the point where perhaps they saw him begging and then going to work and feeding pigs, and no one had compassion on him. No one gave him anything. This is the way of the world, right? They love you as long as they have, as long as you have something they want, whether it be money, whether it be fame, whether that be attention, whether that be, you know, popularity, whatever it might be, position at work. They love you as long as you have something they want. This is the way of the world. But then as soon as you lose it, you're worthless to them. You're worthless. That's why if the opposite is true, though, of God and God's people. The friends of the world are interested in your possessions, but the friends of God are interested in you and your salvation. That's why St. Paul, when he came to speak with the Corinthians, there are these teachers of the Corinthians who proclaimed to be Christian, but they were taking advantage of the people. So St. Paul says, look at us and the true apostles. We don't take advantage of you. And what does he say in 2 Corinthians 12? He says, I will very gladly spend and be spent for your souls. Though the more abundantly I love you, the less I am loved. The one who's serving them tirelessly, what does he say? I would very gladly be spent, or spend and be spent. Meaning what? I will spend my soul and my resources for your souls. And this is very true. St. Paul didn't take a penny from the church of Corinth. He took it from Philippi and other churches, but he didn't take a penny. And he worked with his own hands to support the church in Corinth, lest they say that he is taking advantage of them, right? And then he says, the more I am loved, the less I am loved by you. This is unconditional love. This is unconditional acceptance. In the world, they'll accept you only if they can take something from you. But in God's house and with God, they accept you, you know, unconditionally. The fourth thing we find outside of the Father's house is the humiliation. We find humiliation. The boy at one point considered eating the food for the pigs. I can't imagine. This is humiliating. Okay, eat something else, you know, cat food, anything. But he said, I eat the food of the pigs. And you know, and of course, Christ used the pigs here. Why? In the Jewish community, the pigs are unclean, right? You couldn't touch a pig. So the boy is willing to even, or desiring to eat the food of the pigs. C.S. Lewis has a very nice saying. He says, the longer we stay in hell, the more we become attached to it. The longer we stay in the pigs, you know, eating with the pigs, we become attached to it. Perhaps if that young boy stayed a little bit longer with the pigs, he would have desired to become a pig, so at least the pods that he wanted to eat could be digested. The longer we stay in sin and in hell, we become more attached to it. And this is what we become comfortable with. This is utter humiliation. And this is what Satan and being outside of the church and outside of the house of God, this is what the result is. Lastly, we see the isolation that happens outside of the Father's house. He says what? And no one gave him anything. Not even a cup of water. Even the person who hired him didn't feel sorry for him. Right? No one gave him anything. Utter isolation. This is what the enemy desires. He desires to isolate us from the church, isolate us from our families, isolate us from the community. That's why, a rule of thumb, anything that leads you to isolation or that keeps you from the fellowship of the believers is from the enemy. Anything that isolates us and keeps us from the fellowship of the community is from the devil. It's from the devil. Sometimes we get the temptation, I want to go find a church that has no people, just me and the priest, and pray by myself. ما عرفش أصلي in front of all of these people. This temptation is from the enemy. Because no one's going to go to heaven alone. مش كده؟ ولا إيه؟ Absolutely not, because all these people here that we have on the iconostasis, they will be there. Right? So no one's going to go to heaven alone. But we can go to hell alone. Imagine hell is being a place where everybody is a liar and a cheater. Can trust nobody. So you end up being alone. Right? So we only go to heaven together. Satan wants to isolate us. Being outside of the house isolates us. Then what happens in his return? These are the benefits of living in the house of God. We see the forgiveness and the compassion of the Father. As he is still a great way off and he's coming back, we see his Father waiting outside and coming running towards him to greet him. Again, put yourself in the scenario of what's going on. He's already humiliated his Father. The whole community, you know, is ashamed at him, and you know, they've cast him out. And they used to have this ceremony. The name of it is slipping my mind. But they would have this ceremony for anybody who would, any Jew who sold their property and spent it in Gentile land. This was a big offense. And they had this ceremony. If anybody did this and came back, it was like it was called a kazaza ceremony. If anybody did this, and they came back, as he comes here, they would take like a pot, and as he was coming back, they would break it, as if to say, you are broken from our community, get out, right? So now, if this is the feeling of the community, and as this son is coming back, the father has to go out to meet him, lest the people, when they see him, they'll begin this kazaza ceremony. So what do you think the people are feeling when the father goes out and embraces him? They see the Father accepting him and restoring him and forgiving him, right? So I don't think that they would do this ceremony, because his own Father forgave him and restored him. And this is what we get. When we're in the Father's house, we get forgiveness and compassion. The boy planned himself to say, I've sinned against heaven and before you, make me as one of your hired servants. But his Father didn't allow him to finish and say, make me as one of your hired servants. But he only permitted him to say that I've sinned against heaven and before you, because he rightly did. But then once he said this, he accepted him back and he forgave and had compassion on him and restored him to his sonship once again. He put the ring on his hand, sandals on his feet. This is all the sign of restoration to be a son again. And as a son again, he's worthy of an inheritance. Then we see the joy. So when we return and we remain in the Father's house, we have forgiveness and compassion, and we have restoration, and then we have joy. We have happiness. We see that the happiness was both on the Father's part and on the community's part. Because he threw this big festival and he told them, kill the fatted calf. And the fatted calf was a lot of meat. The family couldn't eat just the fatted calf. It needs a community of people, 60, 70, 80 people to be able to eat, you know, this fatted calf. So he threw this big party, and the father himself was rejoicing. And he was rejoicing because his son was lost and his found. But what about the community? Was the community rejoicing because of this young boy? No. To them, this boy was a shame. This boy was a disgrace for a Jew. This boy should have been excommunicated. But what were they rejoicing? The community was rejoicing in the father's self-sacrifice and generosity and restoring his son to the family. So the community was rejoicing because of the father and his acceptance and his restoration to his son. And the father was rejoicing in his young son that was lost and is found. So in the father's house, there is joy, there is restoration, there is forgiveness and acceptance. And mind you, the father had to sacrifice his dignity in order to restore his son. He was humiliated when he left, and he had to sacrifice his dignity when his son returned. The Lord gave us an example today of those who or in the Father's house and experience and enjoy the freedom. And those who are outside of the Father's house, who are experiencing, you know, who are tricked into thinking that this is freedom and having no restrictions, but yet they find that the people's acceptance to them is conditional. The pleasure is passing and not lasting, and there is humiliation and isolation. But inside the Father's house, there's love, restoration, forgiveness, and joy. And the parable concludes with a scene with the older son. And when he heard that his younger brother came back and there was a festival going on, he became angry. And he says, "This son of yours," not my brother, "this son of yours took your money, spent it on harlots," again, accusing him falsely, right? He was angry. And then the parable ends, and we don't know whether this older boy went into the banquet or not. To tell us what? Inside the Father's house, we have freedom. And outside of the Father's house, we have bondage. But at the end of the day, it's our choice. We now have the choice in the New Covenant to choose freedom or to choose bondage. In the Old Testament, it was all bondage, right? The gates of heaven were not open. The paradise wasn't open. But in the New Testament, we have now the choice of choosing bondage over freedom, to be inside the Father's house or to be outside of the Father's house. And believe me, inside is always better. That's why in the Pauline epistle today, we heard St. Paul say, "You are not restricted by us, but you are restricted by your own afflictions." Don't let our afflictions and our attraction to things that are outside convince us that outside is better. The grass is not greener on the other side. It looks green, but when you get there, it's brown. The grass is greener inside the house. To God be the glory forever and ever. Amen.